The following podcast contains explicit language.
Hello, and welcome to the amazing, unbelievable, special, bonus, extra, Slate Money Succession. It's not even a recap. It's just going to be a conversation. I'm Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm joined by Emily Heck of HuffPost.
But hello.
Emily, who is sitting at this table with us?
It's so exciting. I can't even believe this is real and happening. But Jerry is here. J. Smith Cameron, the one and only.
She is here with us. There is. I hear there are other actors on this show, but I forget.
I don't believe it. No, there's only one actor on Succession.
But as if that's not enough.
Another star is born to us today.
Taffy Hackner, welcome back. Sorry, I'm going to... I always did this thing where I talked about the Huffington Post, and it's not the Huffington Post, it's HuffPost.
Right.
And I do this thing where I talk about Taffy Hackner. It's not Taffy Hackner, it's Taffy Brodessa Hackner.
Thank you so much. My husband thanks you as well.
Taffy Brodessa Hackner is back with us.
I am.
I mean...
You just can't quit us.
Quite aside from being like the Jerry Wrangler.
I mean, we all know why I was invited back.
Taffy has been, you've been going around taking photographs with Kieran Culkin and like basically every celebrity in the world because you are now famous.
I don't know. I have no comment on that.
But yes, we are here to answer at least a few of the bigger picture questions, because now we know how it all ended how season two ended, and we can get some like inside answers from J. Smith Cameron about things like tables. How important is it to have like lots of people sitting around a large table in almost every episode?
Right, I know. It's true. It's like there's always it seems like a reference to that movie Celebration, or is that the name of that movie? It's like a Swedish movie or something?
Yeah.
Is that the name of it? Celebration?
Anyway, I don't know.
It's a shocking...
The Celebration is, yeah.
It's a shocking, dysfunctional family meltdown movie that's fantastic, but I've probably called it the wrong name.
There are so many pivotal scenes in the second season
that
take place around
a
table.
Where else are they going to sit?
And how else are they going to sit?
Right.
Sometimes they're on couches.
Sometimes they're on
Because Roman famously doesn't know how to sit.
Roman can't sit. Roman can't
he has to perch.
Is that how he is in real life, too? Can Kieran Culkin sit in a chair? Tell us.
He's squirmy.
I would say he is.
I remember you guys talked about
exactly
that.
Exactly like he is in my 15-minute countenance.
He draws on himself a lot. That's true.
Can we talk about you and Roman, Kieran Culkin's character?
Sure.
So, like, who's like, did that just, when you walked in to start filming season two, and you saw, like, first question is, do you see, like, all of the scripts for all of the episodes?
No. They're not written yet. I don't really know what the whole hoodoo of how they do the writing, but they go into writer's room, and I think they're basically I'm speculating here. Once again, just
that's
a disclaimer.
We like speculation on the show.
I think they talk about the whole season and the arc, and they make, I think they do that kind of thing. And then they really write the scripts as they go along. And sometimes we get really we'll have a table read draft, and then that will even get rewritten. So sometimes we get our real draft just before we start shooting.
So are the episodes shot sequentially? As episode one gets shot and then episode two gets shot?
Mostly, but sometimes they do what's called block shooting, because if they have a common location,
right,
they'll kind of treat a couple together as like one film almost.
As a professional interviewer, I would say that the natural follow-up question here is how did the last script change from the table read to what we saw?
You know, I'm still trying to figure that out a little bit, because we read a so-called final draft once we got to Croatia, very top secret, like still just only people who needed to know.
Wow.
There.
Watermarked within an inch of its life.
Exactly. But, you know, the thing they do too, and all TV shows do this, is that they have last minute rewrites. So a scene that I'm not in, I wouldn't necessarily even open or get those rewrites. And so when I watch at home, I'm often really surprised, even if I've read most of it, just how they'll cut it together, what the actual story that they're telling, even in, within a scene, is sometimes a surprise to me.
But there was no version where Jerry gets sent away on a boat and then comes
in. not that I was made aware of.
Like poor Jamie Laird, or Laird Jamie, whatever his name is. We're not really sure.
Why does he have two names?
We don't know.
I know two first names.
That's the thing. You can answer all these questions because
I
we
don't.
Have so
I don't
many
know that.
Small
I
questions.
Think, you know what? I don't know that because I only, listening to it, heard somebody call him Jamie. So Jamie must be his first name, but
right.
They call him that.
I think his name
I thought his Laird in the script.
Name, his character name is Jamie Laird, I think.
Oh, there you go.
But he's the only character who's referred to by his last name on a regular basis. Except, I mean, even Wamsgans is never referred to as Wamsgans.
Because no one can say it. Because you're the only one who can say it.
How did you know about the twist? I mean, everyone loves this twist ending. Did you know about it? Or?
Yes. But again, that was like... redacted in some scripts that were passed out. So, but the people who
did you know about it before you got to Croatia?
Yeah.
Did you know about it when you were filming like episode one?
No.
Somewhere in the middle there.
I don't know when.
Did you have Wi-Fi in Croatia? Yeah. Were you allowed to communicate with others?
Yes.
Was there reception on the boat?
Yes, there was reception on the boat.
And what was your level of surprise when you first read the script where Jerry's relationship with Roman goes to this weird next level place? What was the level of, oh my God.
Disgusting. What was it? Disgusting pig.
Well, we were shooting when we had our first table read ever of episode 201, mm-hmm. we read it. And then Alan Ruck afterwards went, so I heard you're Roman's love interest. And I had that reaction. I was like, ha, ha, ha. You know, I did not think about it twice.
Oh, my gosh.
I just only thought it was a joke. And then we were shooting. There's a part in the first episode where you see Roman and Jerry's with him. And he goes to Japan to sort of smooth over the satellite disaster.
Yeah.
And we're watching Kendall on an iPad, his announcement that he makes. And Mark Mylod was like, just cozy up a little bit to him when we go again.
Right.
Just a little foreshadowing. Wow. And then he was like, action.
He was like, foreshadowing?
What the hell are you talking about?
Oh, my God.
So we finally, I was like, Mark, do you want to explain that very shocking, cryptic comment you made? And he said, oh, my God, has no one told you?
And told Alan, apparently, just not
I
you.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I don't know what Alan was going on.
The conheads were going crazy.
Alan doesn't need much to tease me about. So he doesn't need a real, you know, factoid to tease me about.
That's crazy.
So all I knew was that because there was already this developing idea of Roman having, like, confusing sexual problems and you know, an elaborate, like, for instance, remember in season one, he had a male trainer who was very cut and handsome. And there was, like, sort of sexual tension between
them. Yeah, and he was stretching him.
Right, he was stretching him.
I remember
him.
That. And I was like, oh.
Right. And so,
what's going on?
You know, there was a little feeling of him sort of always being up for grabs, like waiting mm-hmm. to see what unlocked his,
right.
you know, his mystery there.
Right.
So,
but he can't
think,
perform. He can't perform with a just.
I don't know.
In a regular situation.
Only Jerry has unlocked.
Only Jerry. Jerry's voice.
Also, I know you do some ad-libbing on the show.
Yes.
Slime Puppy.
Yes.
Was that ad-libbed?
Yes,
or?
It was.
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow.
That was some of my
That's
final
off
work.
To you. That is amazing.
You know, technically, I'm your fucking boss.
Go to bed, Roman. Go to bed and masturbate all your ideas out. And let's see how excited you feel tomorrow.
Well, maybe. Maybe I will. I mean, maybe I'll just leave you on the pillow so you can hear my brilliance cascading.
Fine. I've heard plenty worse than a spoiled brat ejaculating on himself.
Yeah? You sure about that? I could be doing it now for all you know.
Well, get going. Chop, chop. You disgusting little pig. You're pathetic. You are a revolting little worm, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I am.
You little slime puppy.
Yes. Yeah, what else am I?
You're revolting, Roman.
Yes. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I should note that Jay just did an amazing smoking a cigarette and putting it out move.
Yes. So, yeah. Classic.
Wow. Like, why did they even pay writers? I
mean, those writers are fantastic. Oh, yeah. My God. Yes. The writers.
I mean, they must have come up with sails out, nails out. That
they're brilliant. They're amazing. I think they're kind of interested in us ad-libbing, not always with the intent to use it, just to see where it will go. Or, like, there's two famous ways they'll do it. One is as a final take on a bit of filming. They'll go, okay, we'll do one more take, and this is sort of a freebie, and just mess it up and do whatever you want. You know, stick to the storyline, but see what happens.
Yeah.
And paraphrase it if you want and so forth. And then the other thing they sort of notoriously do is just leave the camera rolling at the end of the scene rather than saying cut. And so sometimes like that's why I have to say slime puppy, because there's no way I would just be like, okay, good night. after that, you know.
Right. So wait, that whole thing was ad-lib?
Not the whole thing, but just there's the feeling that what was written, as I recall, and Georgia Pritchett, if you're listening to this, forgive me if I've got this wrong, she'd written that, you know, it becomes clear what's going on the other side of the phone call. And there's like one or two lines like, oh, my God, that's terrible. Yeah. And then they just didn't cut. And the idea was that Roman was doing his thing.
Yeah. And Jerry stays on the phone. Jerry shows signs of hanging up.
And Kieran and I were trying to figure out whether, I mean, one way to play that scene would be that my character is so grossed out and so shocked and finds it so repellent that that I get angrier and angrier. Like, cut that. What the hell? You cut it out. Uh-huh. And that just excites him more. So that's what happens. Or what happened around the table when we did our table read of that episode. We were doing the Hungry episode, the Boar on the Floor episode. And we were shooting. And it was just at lunch. We read. And we'd just gotten it kind of the night before. So those of us who had a lot of scenes to film that day, we kind of like did a really light read of it. And then we're worried about what we're doing on the set that day instead. So when we did that around the table, when the nickel dropped, if you might say, when I realized what he's doing on the other end of the line, I kind of went, you know. So then Georgia was like, kind of like that, you know, that take on it, that I'm sort of amused.
This shocked, works so well amused. On podcast form.
She had that. It's the same. She made Jay made the same expression that you made in the episode, which is sort of like shocked and delighted at the same time. Just like so amused not believe and delighted. It. I loved it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just like oh my God, no.
I hate this. Yeah.
Yeah. So then we kind of went with that. But I think the thing about all those Jerry Roman scenes, or Roman Jerry scenes, Karen Culkin, if you're listening, is that, you know, we try it and any given beat, from beat to beat to beat in those scenes, things like turn on a dime. Like they go from being like kind of, you know, Jerry upbraiding him about his behavior to being amused to being really, really talking to him about, you know, like a real sincere, like, what are you doing, you know?
Right.
And it just changes it on a dime. So we do, every time we do one of those scenes, we seem to do a lot of versions of them.
Right.
And so it's always a surprise to me because how they edit it then tells what actually is the story in the scene, if you know what I mean.
So do you know when you're shooting episode 7, like how they edited episode 5?
No. And that was in this one example, that was a really tough thing because I was like, well, is the story thus far X or is it Y? You know, I don't really know. Like, am I horrified? Am I sort of amused? Am I, you know, and different directors had sort of different takes on it too. And when we went to do that scene in the Pierce house, in the bathroom, the notorious bathroom scene, Mark Mylod was like, you know, I think it's actually a bit seductive, you know, that like I'm horrified and I'm also kind of, you know, enjoying it in some weird way. So, but really then another director might be like, no, she's totally taking the piss out of him.
So I'm fascinated by this idea.
I think it's strategic too, right? Yeah. I mean, you need your ally. It was so key in the finale because he sticks up.
That's a dangerous tightrope because that seems like that could blow up in
I mean, she never answered his marriage proposal. I just want to say that I was hoping that the last episode might address.
Well, we shot some material in both 9 and 10 that we haven't seen, which I am not at liberty to see. And I don't know whether that will play as written for season 2 or whether they'll drop it or change it or, you know, or whether.
I mean, there's a hell of a lot of Chekhovian guns floating around season 1 and 2.
I mean,
you can't use all of them.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, you can't. But
no, that'd be a lot of characters to write for.
Apple Card is the perfect cash back rewards credit card. You earn up to 3% daily cash on every purchase every day. That's 3% on your favorite products at Apple, 2% on all other Apple Card with Apple Pay purchases, and 1% on anything you buy with your titanium Apple Card or virtual card number. Visit apple.co/cardcalculator to see how much you can earn. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Terms apply.
What's so interesting to me about the show are the amount of wide shots that have just a million characters in it. So that means you're just standing there in character, not doing anything. How long are scenes shot for?
It depends. I feel like, and I again, this is just my faulty memory, but when we did that scene, for instance, the big dining table scene at the Pierce home,
such
where Shiv blurts out her,
scene.
Right? The electric circus scene.
That's how we met. That's our meet cute.
Yeah. You had me at electric circus. So when we did that scene, I feel like that took at least a full day, if not a day and a half, of sitting around the table because of all the food continuity and the fact that we were all there in one place, but the cameras had to kind of float around and pick things up. So there was a lot of going, you know, because one of the things that happens is all of those scenes are sort of more than the sum of their parts. There's the jokes that are written or the bombshells are written, but then there's all the connective behavior. If Jeremy's talking to Naomi on one end of the table, that doesn't mean that Tabitha and Roman aren't talking in between their scripted lines on the other end of the table. So there's the feeling of floating around and trying to catch interesting behavior, if not interesting dialogue, that just
so
evolves.
Complicated.
So yeah, it's a bit complicated.
Yeah.
And they kind of just have to, you know, I mean, a camera op is looking through his lens. So you can't, they don't always have the wide shot up. So I don't know how they catch everything, but they're very good at it.
I mean, and then how do decisions like Tabitha and like Marcia don't even turn up on the boat?
Where's Marcia?
Where's Marcia?
Please tell us Marcia's coming back.
I don't know. I know nothing. I don't know what's going on.
What's going to happen? Her settlement must be amazing.
Can you talk about how popular, like the show kind of had one of those like slow builds where people started just getting obsessed and more obsessed and more obsessed as the season went on. And you were right there on Twitter, I feel like.
Yeah.
Just really like
ginning
it up, getting into it. I mean, have you been surprised by the reaction?
You can't resist that. That's amazing.
You're clearly the best Twitter personality of all the on all the
yes.
the show.
The rest, the others are too dignified.
No,
I'm like the Twitter
they're too
ho.
Scared. They're scared.
Yeah, it's exciting because I feel like it's also fun to see the kinds of people that particularly like Succession.
Yeah.
And literary types.
And it's not just media Twitter, but it is all of media Twitter.
It's all of media Twitter.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's all of we're
and then,
obsessed.
Really into it.
And then but it's the yeah, it's funny.
There should be a screening just for media Twitter.
There should.
Yeah.
That's a good
for
idea.
The next season. Can I ask an actor-y question?
Sure.
Do you have a backstory for Jerry?
The husband.
Oh, thank you.
We learned this in season one.
The dead husband.
There's a dead husband.
Godmother.
Also, how did she get this job in such a misogynist climate?
Did she sleep with Logan?
She's chief counsel. She's chief counsel.
It was implied that she slept with
there
Logan.
There was, yeah. Okay, so tell us.
Of course, I made up a backstory, but then I have to keep adapting it because, I mean, the thing about television that's different from writing a novel or a film script or a play is you don't know how long it's going to be.
Right.
So you can't really know what the end is. So you have to be a little flexible if you're the actor because they may need you to suddenly have, something be in your backstory. Like, I always thought that Jerry was maybe the one person who never got fired, that I always just stepped out of the line and fired at the last minute.
Right.
Because I just got that from season one, the sort of no-confidence coup that doesn't quite work. You know, I just sort of bail out of the last minute very cunningly. And so I just had made up, I didn't even realize I made it up. I just, like, very sure that I never got fired. And then we shot some material that is sort of in the background in Scotland at the fete that they give for him. We all had these like tribute monologues where we talk about our history with Logan, what a great guy Logan Roy is. And I talk about being fired 18 times and rehired.
Wow.
And I was like, we were shooting some, like, a splinter unit, so it was happening simultaneously with something else. I had them call the other set and check with Jesse, is that right? Like, Jerry was fired all these times? And the answer was like, yeah, I think everyone's fired all the time. So, and then you can't really hear that.
She was fired by Waystar.
I don't know. It was news to me on the spot. And then, you know, you can't really hear that in the background. So that doesn't necessarily... If it didn't really make it into the cut, then maybe that isn't true. Mm. We might find out I was the one who was doing
it. Maybe if you'd wrapped it, it would have made it.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Note to self.
L to the OG.
What did you guys make of that? I want to hear what you thought of that.
I mean, that was the most iconic moment of the season.
I know.
Not least because it was so well written musically that you couldn't get it out of your head.
Yes, I couldn't. I watched it so many times. I couldn't believe it was happening.
Yeah, you can't believe it's happening.
And I heard the reactions from you and everyone were just your reactions.
It was also kind of foreshadowing because in the first scene of the show ever, he's rapping. He's in the back of that
car, and
he's rapping. And this
That's Beastie Boys.
This
right.
was a signal to us that he's back. If you were to look at it long game wise.
Also, he does a mic drop at the end.
Yeah.
And then, like, I don't know if it's the last season, the last scene of the finale when he rips up. That's kind of like a mic drop when he rips up the prepared remarks.
The Kendall mic drop.
And throws
drops him
out.
Him
it's
in
like,
the bin.
Yeah. It's an echo of his mic drop.
I mean, they did such a great job with that. Like, he was like the Theon Greyjoy of that show. Like, he was just destroyed. And to see him just come, like, that was this crazy surprise. You just got used to him.
No, but he can. He actually.
Like,
I mean,
doing
it's
it.
Deeply embarrassing and cringeworthy. But also, he can actually rap.
Yeah, it's kind of
can rap.
Yeah,
I know.
Jeremy Strong is going to be on Hamilton.
Jeremy.
I know. I mean, that just takes incredible guts, right?
It's amazing
because you're playing all those things. You're also playing the little boy whose tail's between his legs.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, all those things are going on in his psyche, and like yet he's got to get the courage up to rap in front of a huge hall full of people.
Rap tribute to your father.
Yeah. That's,
I've never seen that before. I've seen a lot.
That was amazing. I was back, like when we cut, I was texting Nicholas Britell because I was like, I can't believe this.
Right.
You
know?
He doesn't get.
He's like, "How's it
Dundee?
Playing?" I was like, "Well, I don't know where he was then."
So I'm assuming here, as someone who has spent a bit of time in Scotland, that Dundee is not like the top of actors' lists of places that they want.
I had never been there before, but that is where Brian Cox is from.
Oh.
And then that beautiful location was there. There's a new
V&A. Yeah.
That's fairly new, as I understand.
I had read that in season one he was supposed to be Canadian, and then they changed
it. Yeah, that's what Brian told me.
And now he's from Scotland.
Because no one would believe a Canadian would be like that.
So true.
Like that.
I don't know whether I have no idea why they did that, except maybe they just thought that would be, you know, fun, and that Brian would be able to bring something to that choice because he's from there.
Yeah. Maybe he couldn't. I mean, who knows? Could he do the accent? Maybe he couldn't do a Canadian accent. You know, those are tougher than they seem.
That's I feel true. Like, so Jerry didn't, you weren't part, your character wasn't part of Boar on the Floor. Is that because Jerry is a little better than everyone else?
Yeah, Jerry is.
What do you mean I wasn't part of it?
Like you were part of this
you
scene,
weren't
obviously,
on the floor.
But you weren't one
oh,
of
no,
the Boar
no,
on
I,
the
no,
floor.
No, remember he took my answer.
Yeah.
I said I was honest and that was just terrifying. You can't really tell the way it's edited, or maybe you can, but I was terrified as Jerry, like really scared.
Right.
Because Jerry's largely very unflappable, but in that instance, I was trembly, you know, like my eyes, not crying, but pink-eyed,
right.
you know,
mm-hmm.
really scared. And it was one of the few times I think she was completely frank, you know, in a moment of truth like that. And I don't know, he sidestepped
right, because she's better.
Jerry, stand up. Stand up! Pierce.
I couldn't tell you.
Don't know. Have you played it before?
No.
Well, actually, to be perfectly honest, I've had a few doubts.
Honesty. You see, everybody, do you see? Honesty.
Don't you think Jerry could find really good employment elsewhere?
Yeah. Why does Jerry want her job so bad?
I don't know. I think I'm a real company man.
Yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
I the backstory I made up about that is that I think maybe my husband had been general counsel and that I worked under him, like a lawyer in the legal department, and kind of came up through the ranks
wow.
like that.
That's interesting.
And his name was Baird. Not Baird, Baird. I say that.
Oh, oh
you do? Baird, that that's, very first a, scene, that's a very specific
the first
backstory.
Scene that both Kieran and I shot on the series. He had been in the pilot, but that had shot, right. I don't know how long before. And I was like, this is where they took Baird, that wing of the hospital. And he was like, oh, yeah, Baird.
Oh.
Like, yeah, your godfather.
Yeah.
And he was like, oh, right.
Right.
Wait. Roman is your ex-husband's godson? Or your,
that part's no, a little
she
confusing.
She is Shiv's godmother, we know from the extortion scene.
I like to think of it as that. We don't really
advice.
Know because they're not a very religious family. I think that my husband was Shiv, what do I say in that scene? I think Shiv's godfather. And then later we just start talking about it as I'm a godmother. And I think maybe it's like no one really remembers. But anyway, right. the idea is that I've been a family friend for decades.
Hmm. And I think the more seasons that this goes on, the more of these like random factoids need to get pinned up on the wall of the writer's room.
I don't know.
On their little Bible.
I mean,
I thought Frank was.
They don't want to put too fine a point on these.
I thought Frank was Roman's godfather.
Maybe. Yeah, maybe
he has
he
said
is.
That.
He's. Yeah,
I'm
he's also.
That. This is all based on information I've received from
the
show.
He also goes back for you know,
yeah.
in the employ of the company for decades.
I know.
Right.
He's the sophisticated
Frank
friend.
Vernon. Yeah. yeah. Shakespeare.
And tell me how, like, I'm. The one thing which has always fascinated me about American TV series is this whole thing of each episode having its own director and its own writer, and there's not a huge amount of continuity in terms of like the directors and how, like, to what degree do the directors need to sort of subsume themselves into the greater whole, and to what degree do they actually have freedom to make episodes their own?
Well, I can't answer that because I'm not a director, so I don't really know. But my feeling is that they do have people, you know, working on the continuity, and that they do study the other episodes, and that they do discuss them with the producers and with the showrunner,
right.
you know, very, very thoroughly and very conscientiously.
Right.
But just moment to moment, if you're on a set and you're deciding how to play a certain thing, then it's just interesting how, I mean, every series I've ever been on is like that, where I was on True Blood years ago, and, you know, my character, some people thought I was sort of pathetic and felt sorry for me, and other people just thought I was a dangerous, horrible, horrible.
These are direct.
Menace.
This is difference between directors.
Yeah, some
wow.
people just thought I was being manipulative if my character was crying, and other people are like, "She's really falling apart." And
but style-wise, on a TV show, I remember I did a story on Jill Soloway when Transparent was coming out. They had a director that would learn how to shoot like Jill did, and that's the job. Which is why the way at the beginning of peak TV, you would see movie stars come in to do roles. You wouldn't necessarily see like star directors come in to be one person, unless they were doing something like when Tarantino did that episode of ER,
right?
Then that was a Tarantino episode of ER. And Diane Keaton did an episode of Twin Peaks. Did
wow.
everyone know that?
I didn't know that.
and it looks different than all the other ones. But I think it was allowed to because...
These ones all look like Mark Mylod, basically. He's the sort of...
I think that, you know, there's a lot of people that weigh in on these things, and it's very collaborative set. And I think Jesse is always the one constant.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, everyone cares that it looks and sounds like the same show. So
let me ask the sort of obvious question that everyone talks about: Succession. And there are the people that are like, it's all horrible people. I don't know how you could watch that. They're all the worst people. But I don't think Jerry is the worst person.
Thank you.
Do you think is she a good person?
Can you rank
under
people
it all?
On
yeah.
Succession from
best to worst? You know, that's a tricky question because. Okay, this might be a little esoteric kind of way to answer it.
Get
but
into it.
I just feel like the whole universe of the story is a world where no one's a good person exactly.
Mm-hmm.
That everyone is self-serving. So that it's sort of moot. Like, I feel like she's more careful. She doesn't have a free pass the way the Roys all feel like they do.
Yeah.
She knows the repercussions of things. I always imagined I was watching in that scene where after the shooter episode, at the end of the shooter episode, when Roman first calls me and it goes weird, the phone call goes weird. I'm watching the news and I always imagined I had on CNN or MSNBC, you know, not the Fox News report of what happened to her. You know, like, so, I mean, I feel like the character is fun because she plays everything so close to the vest that you don't want to know too much about what, you know, but I think she also is just so used to being very crafty as a lawyer and really just there's a certain mercenary her MO is always to think of the way out of the puzzle. And I don't think it's I don't know how to talk about her morality, but right. I think she might seem like a better person because she isn't she's not royalty.
She's
like
smart.
She's, yeah.
You
she's,
can see
she's
like,
also the one with a skill, right?
Yeah,
like out of all of them, none of them have a skill. And
so
Jerry
true.
Can answer questions
yeah.
when they have questions. That's but yeah. also Logan calls her the most loyal person.
Yes.
Like, the minute like he's throwing his children and his son-in-law under the bus, but the minute someone brings up Jerry, he's like, Jerry's the most.
Hands
like it's
on
the only
hand.
Thing,
yeah.
it's the only kind thing you ever hear from him.
Like father, like
yeah.
son.
Because maybe they had
because whenever they cut to the list of the people who were, you know, prized to be discarded.
From that weird
Jerry's
list.
Always at the top of those
yeah.
lists when you can
yeah.
see the cutaways of
right.
like.
Well, I mean, you have been fired 18 times.
Well, apparently. But we don't really know because I don't think it made it into the cut after all. So
right.
They made
but
a strong case true. For your That's... firing around the table. I was like,
yeah,
that,
sure.
That works.
It
Jerry
does
works.
Make sense.
Except that she's one. It was, he also makes a good point that
we've
woman.
Killed enough women.
Oh, yeah.
We
can't kill any more women.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
But for instance, okay, so here's an improv thing that happened, is that we did some improvisation that didn't make it in the cut on episode 9 during the hearings. And the Democrat senator asked Jerry, do you have children? And Jesse and I had decided not to put a point
Jerry
on that.
Jerry actually gave testimony. In
well,
that.
Yes, and but it wasn't. There was scripted testimony that we just didn't get to use, mm-hmm. and then we had some filler stuff. I think maybe they. Now that I see the episode, when they cut back to the sort of bunker where everyone's watching and talking,
mm-hmm.
they probably needed again something to be on the screen that we hadn't. You know, that was some extra material. If that makes sense. So I had said yes. I have two adult daughters, and
twist.
Yeah, I just said this sort of off the top of my head. In my backstory, I had thought that maybe I had two grown daughters. And she was like, would you feel safe having your daughters on a Waystar cruise? And I said, well, given all the scrutiny it's under now, I don't think there's a safer possible vacation. And it was so
that's
that was
exactly
all part
the
of the bulletproof monk. Right,
know.
Exactly. So then, and Jesse came running out because he knew I thought my characters have two daughters. It's a weird random thing. And he goes laughed and thought that was funny. And then, you know, it ended up being cut from 9. I forgot all about it. And then, but then when we did 10, mm-hmm. there was in the script that the daughter's flying free on the company dime.
Right.
And it's never mentioned before.
I would have thought she.
And I thought, oh, they'll cut that too, but they didn't.
Well, my thing, I guess, is that if Rhea is no more, sadly, we're back to having, Jerry as named successor. So that fattens her up for the kill, so to speak.
I guess everyone knew I was always just a name on a piece of paper.
Oh, I think you were always more than that.
I think that's
and
exactly
plus,
right.
Well, hang on. Plus, you know, the old copybook is a bit lotty. Expense accounts, daughters, first class on the company coin.
Right, Carl. You know,
yeah.
I just went for the sports massage. I had no idea it was that sort of establishment.
Okay.
Carl sounds good. Mm-hmm. Sausage thief.
I would have thought the daughters would be invited to Shiv's wedding. I don't know.
They could have been there.
Maybe they were there.
Right. Maybe they were there.
Maybe.
There were a lot of people there, and I couldn't account for all of them. There was a lot going on at that wedding.
Yeah, and if there's Uncle Ewan and Greg the egg, there must be some other Roy
right.
relatives themselves that
how long,
are at the wedding or aren't at the wedding.
How long were you away from New York? How long was the shooting period? 3 months? 6 months?
3 months. 6 or 7
12
months.
12 months. Okay, 6 or 7 months.
Long.
So how long were you, like, how many, how much, because you live in New York.
Yeah.
Okay, so how long were you in New York for it all? Because it was
on location
everywhere.
Right?
A lot of it, well, all the, yes, the offices and the home sets are all shot in New York.
Okay. First of all, I just need to jump in very quickly because I'm a big architecture nerd. Waystar Royco, we know that in season two, the exterior of Waystar Royco is the Chase Manhattan Tower, but the interiors are not, right?
Right.
He's asking where the interiors are. Are you allowed to say?
I don't know because I don't know if we'll be back there. You know, like I'm not sure.
Is it a studio or is it
No, it was shot at World Trade Center.
World Trade. It's like three World Trade, right?
Or seven.
Seven World Trade, right.
But that's what they're doing in seven World Trade.
So, yeah, we shot there and we shot out in Queens. Like they shot the pilot. I wish I knew the name of where that house is. It's like a embassy or something. It's not an embassy, but the house where they shoot the Roy. It was before my time because it was in the pilot. But then they built an incredible replica of it in the studio. It's like right down to the moldings and everything, just right down, you know, perfect.
And the Hungarian lodge is in Long Island somewhere?
We shot that in Long Island.
That
yes.
was in Hungary?
So we shot.
I really thought it was.
I know. It might have been at this show, right? Yeah. Could have been, right?
I mean, you went to Croatia.
We do go.
My architecture Amazing. Nerd thing is that there are a lot of things shot in Budapest now because it's the only thing that looks old anymore in Europe, and it has great tax breaks.
Yes.
So I can always spot a movie that where it's like, this is France. No.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But so we went to Scotland and we went to Croatia, and then they shot, I think, you know, the scenes in London with Lady Caroline.
Mm.
But I don't think that was actually London. I think that was somewhere in Scotland, maybe in Glasgow. Just the shooting, just what you're saying.
Wow.
Glasgow as London. And then...
Where's Logan's house?
Logan's...
The Summer apartment. Palace?
No. Oh. I know where that is. Isn't that... That must be in the Hamptons.
That is in the Hamptons, right?
That is the Hamptons.
Oh, the Summer Palace.
It is the Hamptons.
Yes, that is in
it. Takes up most of the Hamptons.
That is its own Hampton.
The
it's Roy Hampton. The townhouse, I was just saying, I can't remember. It's on the Upper East Side, but the real one. But that's a duplicate of it.
There's a duplicate.
In the studio.
Okay.
Yeah, incredible duplicate. Ooh. Amazing.
Oh, my God.
And then, but then we shot, you know, scenes. We shot in Albany, SDC.
What?
We shot.
What? Yeah.
Although the hearing room was a set in a soundstage, that hearing room, which looks exactly
like a hearing
room. Like the hearing rooms, right. And then we shot in at Lake Placid for the Sun Valley episode.
Mm.
That was in Lake Placid?
Mm-hmm. So we shot technically in New York, but we were, you know.
It was a schlep.
We were not with our families. We were on location. We shot out in Long Island several times as Hungary, and then the Turnhaven is on the North Shore, and then the Hamptons, and then
it's all amazing.
Glasses. Yeah, so
I'm
we
so
travel
for this
a lot.
Information.
We travel a lot. I know.
Even though you're mostly just traveling to Long Island.
Long Island isn't really. Some people just commute there.
Yeah. By helicopter, I mean, to really live the role.
We just get on and off the helicopter.
Very nice.
And then into a van.
Are the helicopters used also for transportation, or are they just used for this moment?
I don't, not that I know of.
Okay,
Maybe not on my
Maybe only just for the family.
Exactly. Those are fancy helicopters. My God. Then a funny, funny thing happened, apparently.
All helicopters are fancy.
I know.
Yeah.
But they had like limo helicopters.
Right.
Which I didn't realize. Anyway, when they were shooting the bit of the Roy's Landing.
Right.
And I guess I don't think I was actually there because they had turned around and they were shooting this way. And so it was just all the Pierces like coming out to greet us.
When they were walking. And so, but they really
ran the helicopter in the background. And apparently all of them got completely wind-tossed. And it was one of the funniest things. There is a little reference to it when you watch it. But it's a little hard because they couldn't be quite as ruined as they really were in real life because they go right into the cocktails.
Right.
And they don't look that, you know, windswept. But it was really like they were in a hurricane.
That's funny.
It was one of the funniest things, apparently. But then you can kind of see it for a second. There's a shot from the helicopter, and they're all being like, you know.
There are a lot of shots of Roy's coming off of helicopters.
Yeah.
And then there's the last episode, again, iconic, Kendall coming off the plane in his perfect suit, which I realized he must have changed on the plane, which kind of was, I mean, he obviously didn't, but just kind of amazing how perfect he looked considering that was a plane change.
Yeah.
It's very...
Unlike Craig, who did not look perfect.
You guys said that. I rewatched it last night.
I think he looked okay.
I feel like he looked amazing.
Craig?
Yeah, he looked just as good as most people I know in a good-looking suit.
But that's not Kendall Tom Ford level looking.
No, but that's Kendall Tom Ford level. You can't always. You can't always.
It can only be Greg.
I have a question. Now, you said on Twitter, what is Jeri wearing in her hotel room?
Oh, that the Max Mara blouse.
Yes, see, now it's Max Mara blouse. But what were you getting at? Because I was like, I'll have you know.
Did you call her frumpy? You had
no idea.
I said it was 80s. It's a puffy 80s.
There was a lot of
blousy
speculation whether those were pajamas or something. But they were. It was just my same outfit. I just took the jacket off. It was underneath.
Answer for yourself.
I am so ashamed.
No, I am so ashamed.
And I am humbled and I take it all back. And if Jeri wants to wear a Max Mara blouse, I would never. It did look a little bit, you know, dynasty.
Oh.
No. Okay.
We don't all agree on that.
Thank you. I thought it was nice. It was nice. You know, it was a whole ensemble because it had a little jacket over it and you just saw a little bit of that silk. Right. Geometric design underneath. But I guess the idea was I'd taken off my jacket, I'd ordered a martini, I was on my laptop, and he comes knocking on the door.
So, what's the most luxurious thing about being on a show of such, like, does it feel as a set, like you're always just in a nice place, or like it's the clothing
even
better
when you're
than
in
you're
Albany?
Used to?
Yeah, all of the above, I think. That's,
really?
Yeah. I mean, it's pretty fun.
So we know that I aspire to that, even though it's portrayed as well, gross. Still not convinced.
When you've gotten up at 3 and been picked up at 4 and you've been in hair and makeup for 2 more hours and then you're, and it's freezing and you have to take your coat off to shoot. It doesn't feel very glamorous when you're doing it, but it is really, really glamorous to go to these different locations. I would say that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's dream job right there all by itself. And just also the people in the room are so fun. There's a lot of biting your lip not to laugh in those scenes. Matthew McFadyen, my God. So he's so funny. He's so great. Don't you think he's great?
He's amazing.
Julius.
He's amazing. And Nick Braun and Kieran. I mean, they're so funny. And Alan Ruck is so, so funny, I think. They're all really great.
So, like, I keep on having this conversation with people who, as Emily was saying, have this, why would I watch a show where all of the characters are so hateful, and my first response is generally, but you don't get it. It's a comedy.
Right. It's a satire, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's a lot of things,
like,
I guess.
Like, why do you want to watch characters who, like, what is the need to watch a character who is not hateful? Like, why is that a thing? I just want to like everyone I interact
with. Most of good shows have hateful characters. Like,
isn't it sort of a thing to people that you love to hate?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
of course. It's like, that's a famous thing, right? Anyway, I think
Logan's the only really bad one on that show. I know that's a very strong statement.
That is a strong statement.
I think everyone is bad. I
think it's a world of bad people.
It is, but he is like what he's is
heart
what
of
spawned
darkness.
It. He like they're all in constant reaction to him.
They wouldn't
and they're
be
all
as
his
bad
prisoners.
If it wasn't for him.
Culture starts at the top. The rot starts.
Yeah. Yeah.
But tell me about like the
whatever. Yes, thank you. I don't know.
I don't know.
Your pet is one of a kind, and so is their journey. While every playful moment is a memory in the making, sometimes cats and dogs are a little too good at getting into trouble. That's why you should check out ASPCA Pet Health Insurance. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program offers customizable accident and illness plans, making it easier for pet parents like you to help your pet get the care they may need. The ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program has been around for over 18 years, and they've helped more than 600,000 pets during that time. They allow you to customize your plan, helping ensure your pet's plan is as unique as they are. Because vet bills can really add up, especially when you're least expecting it. It's simple. Use their app to submit a claim, and you'll receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/slatemoney. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
Like, where does it fit in? I mean, there's a lot of very literary references sort of sprinkled around, from Eliot to Pound to loads of Shakespeare. And when you're playing it, you're a thespian, you're a theatrical type.
I beg your pardon.
how do you feel about it? Do you feel like it's sort of Shakespearean, or it's a little bit more like grounded in that, or?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's it's like a Shakespeare and Veep mashup or something.
Right.
It's like the kind of crude humor of Veep.
And not that Shakespeare wasn't crude when he wanted to be.
Yeah, that's true too. No, it's got all these classical allusions, but I think too it's because it's mythic. You know, it's got mythic proportions. So there's like Odyssey and Iliad references and Greek mythology.
There are a lot of ahas that you guys pointed that out, right? Didn't someone point that
someone
out?
Yeah.
But I am astounded by the amount of fuck offs.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's a whole meme now.
Is it?
Meme?
Okay. Yeah. I haven't seen it. Yeah. Like, fuck off is a real. It's really taken that
like
show by
motto.
Storm. Yeah, it's like nobody.
Yeah,
and like, Willa even.
In
Willa, you got a Willa fuck off.
How's
the
play
end.
Going?
Fuck off.
And then season 9, of course, I mean, in episode 9 in Dundee, when they're giving their, you know, I love you, Dad, so it's always, and fuck you, Dad. Mm-hmm. That's how they say, I love you.
I think Shiv said it, and to his delight. That's how you earn his love by telling
him. Are they going to get divorced?
I don't know. I hope not.
Oh, that's nice of you.
I really, that storyline really gets me. Like, that seems really human to me.
Do you have a theory for, like, why she married him?
Why does anyone marry anyone? You know what I mean? Like, it's kind of a mysterious thing. And then I guess the idea is that, you know, he's like this preppy frat kind of guy who is like fun and made things simple and made things easy and was probably an antidote to how fraught her life was. He's from the Midwest and he's kind of easygoing. And I don't know. She makes some allusion to having been through something intense that he was like there for her then. And
oh, I don't remember that.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what it was. Maybe in season 1.
I was a wreck or something.
Yeah, I was. Yeah. And I think maybe he was just like a male nurse almost, like, you know, like fun and easygoing and wholesome. And
I feel like,
kind of like a frat boy.
I feel like women like that only get one kind of man, just like men like that only get one kind of woman. Like, they're like women, people like that never have a this. I don't think a lot of men can tolerate a woman like this. And so they're, you have.
Say what you're doing with your
hands. I'm doing
with
my hands. I'm doing alpha and beta.
Yeah.
I'm doing, like, I think that, like, like an alpha woman and a beta man just know that they go together. And sometimes that's intolerable to the beta man because he's surrounded by other alpha men.
Right. And he's that's the story.
But she also goes extra far to treat him terribly.
Indeed.
Meat puppet. I'll never get over it. My meat puppet isn't working.
But then in 9, she really protects him.
Yeah.
When push comes to shove, she's like, just can it not be Tom?
She destroys her own.
She destroys
her own.
Like,
own
chance at the bid. Senior whatever.
Yeah.
CEO spot, I guess.
She has to make a choice between her family and him. And I read it as she picked him.
That's how I read it.
It's kind of like the whole,
but
if
I
you
don't
look
know.
At the Shiv.
Isn't he already gone? Isn't he already gone? Isn't the Cove thing, wasn't that goodbye?
Nah, oh, no. He's still in it.
I mean, he
ate the chicken.
Yeah,
well, it's almost like the power baton is shifted from Shiv to Tom. And Tom says that, and all of a sudden she's like talking to Logan and like, can it not be Tom? Mm-hmm.
Put this in the table read when you're doing that first table read for the final episode. And Matthew McFadyen eats the chicken. Like, what? Like, that was the most astonishing scene.
Hysterical. I know. I wish I'd been on set that day when they shot it. I mean, later we're like, were you there? Wait, were you there for, you know, what? How did the chicken go? How did that moment go?
How many pieces of chicken did he eat?
Yeah, like, how many takes?
I'm so dumb that I'm like, but you were all on a boat.
Well, because they wrap people at certain times.
Yeah, and they have docks.
And we had to go back to our hotel in shifts, kind of, on a smaller boat. So we'd, you know, wrap us, and then
this was all just off the coast of Dubrovnik.
We started in Dubrovnik, and then for a while we were in a hotel on Korčula. Not bad.
Wow,
Dubrovnik's very nice, very touristy, but very, very nice, really beautiful. We were in Dubrovnik when, sort of towards the end of our set, our shoot on the boat, I guess they also did the scene, the kidnapped scenes while they were over there.
After
they'd wrapped a lot of us. Not in Dubrovnik, but somewhere.
Oh, that was in Croatia as well?
Yeah. I think they shot that in Croatia. Anyway, but the night that we found out that there were Emmy nominations, we were in this hotel in Dubrovnik, and somewhere down the coast they were having fireworks, like the next hotel, and we were like having champagne and dinner on this balcony with fireworks in the background. It was the incredible. And I think there was a lunar eclipse that night too. Like we were like, we felt like we were hallucinating.
Wow,
it was so giddy.
Amazing.
It was fantastic.
So this season two really, like, it did get way more Emmy nominations than season one, right?
That was for season one.
Oh, that was the season one.
Yeah.
We still have to wait for Emmy nominations for season two.
Season two is just going to clean up,
yeah,
obviously.
But I think, you know, I think that's supposed to be really good to get those nominations for us, you know, a freshman effort.
Oh, yeah.
I don't really always follow those things so closely, but that was supposed to be good.
What were the nominations for? I'm sorry, I don't know.
Best drama nomination. It got best casting nomination. It got score, which it won. Jesse got a writing nomination for episode 10 of season one, Nobody Is Ever Missing. Which, by the way, talking about literary allusions.
That's a poem.
That comes from a John Barrowman poem. And so does the name of the finale
in season two. Yeah.
Oh, I wondered about that.
Yeah.
I don't know that from knowing poetry. I know that from reading everything I possibly could.
Wait,
Vulture
did a really tremendous job covering the finale
within an inch of its life.
But that was kind of wild to call back all the way to the finale from season two.
It was amazing.
What was the name of the finale of season two? I feel so embarrassed I don't know this. We have to get our John Berryman poems out.
Yeah. Hand me that book over there, Felix.
I happen to have a slender volume of John Berryman poems to hand.
This is not for tears.
This is not for tears.
Right. That is
for the win.
What do you think that means in terms of the episode?
Well, the poem, I'm trying to see if I have the poem here. The poem is great.
Because all of the other episodes were just named after locations.
The poem, right. Right.
Argestes. Who comes up with like a name like Argestes? It's amazing.
Like someone in that writer's room has a Greek mythology minor and a comparative lit major.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Romulus and Remus references as well. Founding of Rome. Rhea is their mother, I think.
It's okay. I thought that Yeshiva. Ophelia thing was from Lou Reed, so I don't know.
So good night, sweet ladies, is Ophelia, but then it's apparently such a legendary line from Hamlet that everyone starts riffing off it, including not only Lou Reed, but also, was it Ezra Pound? No, it was T.S. Eliot. It's in The Wasteland as well.
Wow. Anyway, I found the poem.
Okay.
But it's sort of about guilt.
Do you think you should do a reading of
the poem? Yeah, let's have
Jack
Smith-Chaplin read John Berryman. Yeah. I feel like this is a good way to do this.
I'll give it a go. Should I, really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Here it goes. There sat down once a thing on Henry's heart, so heavy, if he had 100 years and more, and weeping, sleepless, in all them time, Henry could not make good. Starts again always in Henry's ears, the little cough somewhere. An odor, a chime. And there's another thing he has in mind, like a grave Sienese face 1,000 years would fail to blur the still profiled reproach of. Ghastly, with open eyes, he attends, blind. All the bells say, too late, this is not for tears, thinking. But never did Henry, as he thought he did, end anyone and hacks her body up and hide the pieces where they may be found. He knows he went over everyone and nobody's missing. Often he reckons in the dawn them up. Nobody is ever missing. So he has this guilt and dread, and he goes over it, and he's sleepless, and he's like, no, I didn't kill anyone.
I feel like we just found out about season three.
I mean, this
Nobody
is, this
is Ever the, Missing. Isn't that the title of the episode?
That's what I was trying to say. The end of Nobody's Ever Missing is the finale season one.
That is beautiful writing situation. That is amazing.
That's an amazing poem.
That is someone doing it at the next level.
Yeah.
We are not worthy of talking about this show.
Yeah, but like every...
Nobody should expect
I'm not worthy of
my
show.
Television show.
It's amazing.
No,
my
but
television
that,
show
that
will
is,
be exactly what you
But that,
expect,
that
you
is...
No.
The, that what we just...
I can do 20 minutes on Lomaine.
Yeah. But that's, I mean, that's all of them. But it's Logan. It's also Kendall.
It's Logan
also,
and Kendall. Yeah. It's Kendall becoming Logan. That's what we just heard.
Interesting, right.
God.
Whoa. There's his guilt, but there's also, we don't really know about Rose. And remember that
we don't know
Ewan
about
says
Rose.
You shouldn't feel guilty about that. Remember?
Yeah.
We don't really know the story, though. It's pretty cool.
Isn't You Shouldn't Feel Guilty About That in reference to the waiter that died?
No, that was Rose's death.
Yeah, he said his Ewan mother goes feel up
to and it's
Logan.
Kendall that tells Rhea to make the toast and include Rose.
Yeah, and it's
you're looking confused.
Who's Rose again?
Well, all we know is
Logan's sister who died.
Who's deceased? And he says, you know, is it Kendall or Shiv that says to? I think Kendall says, you know, you could when you make your toast, you could
to Rose
mention Rose, and then she does, and it's a massive foot in the mouth, and everyone's like,
yeah, his face falls.
I can't believe you mentioned Rose.
Awful booby trap there.
I can't believe Rhea was not part of the season finale. I think you predicted it a couple, didn't you?
Sure, of course.
You did. Someone predicted it on this podcast, which is the only podcast that's Succession related that I listen to, who said she's just here for another couple of episodes and then she's gone. Was it you?
It might have been me.
It was Allison.
Maybe it was.
It was Allison. Allison Benedict. Allison Benedict really does see a lot of things coming.
Maybe she's been reading a lot of John Berryman.
Maybe she's the puppet master pulling the Succession strings in a way we don't know.
So the situation right now is that the writers are all writing furiously for season 3.
I guess. I mean.
And then at some point you get called back to exotic locations.
I hope so.
When do you start shooting again?
I don't know.
They don't tell you?
I don't know yet.
Oh my God.
I know.
What a life. What a life that is.
I'm so glad you came and talked to us and brought cake for Taffy.
Yeah.
Oh, the cake for Taffy. The princess cake.
It made my month, my year.
There are photos on Twitter. I'm sure.
Did you put it up on Twitter already?
It might be up on Twitter.
Wow, how exciting.
Yeah, because it's glorious. Thank you so much for coming in. Thank you for bringing in a princess cake.
And for Princess Taffy.
And thanks to Taffy.
Princess.
I think. Thank you, Taffy, for bringing in the amazing J. Smith Cameron, because, I mean, what better way to end this mini season?
Let's do it again next year, guys.
We'll come back. I mean, things are only going to be...
Let's start our own podcast and have them on as guests.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's do it.
Please, please invite us on the Jay and Taffy podcast.
We will.
And then, we'll just continue it. And then there'll be some other iteration for the Fleischman is in Trouble podcast.
I'm really hoping you do a Fleischman is in Trouble podcast.
Of course.
That's launched off of Slate Money. Well, thanks for having me again.
Yeah.
Am I the only person who's a guest twice? I just want to mark my territory here.
You are definitely
here.
In the top two.
Who else was twice?
Edmund Lee.
Oh, your colleague?
Right. The first, yeah. I'm sorry. The first and the most recent.
Yeah.
Well, I'll see him in season 3.